Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm Brandon Walters, managing editor of Texas Scorecard. And we're joined right now for a conversation with Lieutenant Governor candidate Aaron Sorrells. Aaron, thank you so much for coming down here today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Lieutenant Governor, it's the second most powerful, some would say the most powerful position in Texas. Explain to folks a little bit about your background and why you're now running for this job.
So, background is basically the kind of the American dream, honestly. I did good in high school. I did good in school always. And I went to college for a little bit and realized it wasn't me. Sometimes this just isn't what it is, right? So I went out and just pretty much worked hard my whole life. Did multiple jobs, became managers at different companies, different corporations. And ultimately what ended up happening is I realized kind of the same reason I'm running to replace Dan Patrick now is that I don't play well in systems. And I don't like when people set rules and they don't follow them. So I was always bucking the corporations and, they couldn't really get me for anything I was doing wrong because I knew their policies. So they would just, they'd put pressure on me. And so I finally decided to go off and start my own business with my dad. And so, we've now got 26 employees and, built it from ground up. The banks aren't loaning money nowadays because of the crash of 08 and 09. And so you have to bust your butt. You got to make your customers happy. You got to do things the right way so that you can become the size of the business we are. And we are still rapidly growing as exists. So that's kind of my background and kind of a little bit of why I'm doing what I'm doing too.
Yes. Yeah, so why, like I said, why Lieutenant Governor? I mean, certainly people, when they look at the legislature, I think there's a thought that usually the Senate has been more conservative than the House. So why take your aim at the Senate?
Well, so here's how I looked at everything. What ended up happening is my son broke his foot. I went into a Cook Children's facility in Fort Worth, Texas, and they looked at me and said, "We don't care about your son right now." This is the short version, but they didn't care. Put your mask on. We're not denying you service. You're not wearing a mask. And they watched my 11-year-old boy cry for 15 minutes over a mask. And so I looked at everything at that point, and I said, okay, enough. I said, when you mess with my children, that will be my line in the sand. I don't care how good my business is doing, how busy we are. I don't care. That's my line in my sand when I'm going to go do something about it. And so that's what ended up happening. And so I looked at what was going on. I looked at the governor candidates. I said, these three guys are doing a good job. I don't need any reason to challenge the three governor candidates. So I had the choice of, doing local level, doing stuff like that, or going higher. And I decided not to go against my House representative because ultimately what I see is when you're a conservative and you buck the system, they just push you to the side. Well, from the lieutenant governor standpoint, they've got to listen. Back to the point of being the most powerful position, right? So I looked at that and said, you know what, if I can do what I can do for a business every day and deal with hundreds of customers, 26 employees, protect their families, have a 5-star rating on Google review after 16 years, which was almost impossible to do this day in the retail world. I think I can know how to take care of people and make things right and do what's best by everybody. So I looked at the person who allowed Abbott to be pretty much the tyrant he was. And I said, well, the guy that should have kept him in check is the lieutenant governor, and he didn't do it. So if he's not going to do it, it's time to replace him along with the governor. So that's what I'm
saying. So you mentioned COVID, right? That's obviously been an issue that's dominated the news cycle really for the last 2 years now almost.
Yes.
What would you do if you were lieutenant governor as far as responding to COVID? Obviously, whenever Governor Abbott released his first emergency proclamation back in March of 2020, the legislature wasn't in session, but they had been in session for a lot of 2021.
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things that could have been done. And what everybody keeps wanting to say is more legislation, more legislation. Well, the fact is we keep trying to legislate our way out of things. And how's that working? Like, we had to do a constitutional amendment for not allowing Abbott to close, or any future governor to close the churches.
Right.
Well, he didn't have the authority to do it in the first place. So what, you think he's going to follow the new law? He didn't follow it before. So, the thing is, we can't legislate our way out of the problem. The problem is we are allowing our government to control everything in our lives. What we should have done and what I would have done differently than Dan has done is that I would have stood up against Abbott and I would have made it very publicly known that he is out of line. He doesn't have the executive order ability to do what he's doing. Mandates aren't law. And he didn't pass this through the legislation to get this properly done. So if he was going to shut everybody down, he should have gone through the legislature. Mm-hmm. He should have talked to the attorney general. He should have gone to the other two branches and made sure he had legal authority to do it. And since he did not, do not comply with these orders. They are unlawful. Mandates do not exist without proper, you know, proper policy. Mm-hmm. So, and that's what I would have done. And then at that point, you know, we'd have seen what would have changed. But, you know, the first step is just like we tell everybody, don't comply. You do not have to listen to the government. We have three branches for a reason. They are to keep each other in check. Uh-huh. And when that is no longer happening, then the people in charge need to be replaced because they're not doing their job.
Another big issue, election integrity. Texas legislature addressed some of this during a special session last summer. Is there anything more that needs to be done to secure Texas's elections?
We needed a lot more than that bill did, including not allowing it to be switched down to a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. So what we need to be doing is a couple of things. We need to get off the electronic voting systems. And what people don't realize is that our counties do not have to follow what the Secretary of State says. Mm-hmm. We don't need the state's authority to do this from the county level. But we need to get off the electronic voting machines. They cost too much. Nothing electronic is secure ever. We need to move back to paper ballots, some type of hard ballot system where we are able to count it physically there, verify the totals. Mm-hmm. And then we could spend all that money that we are now spending on electronic voting and spend it on having people at the polls that day to do all the counting, because those voting machines are expensive. And there's no justification. The amount of money it would cost to operate hundreds of people to count on uh-huh. poll day would be cheaper than what we're paying for electronic voting. So along with that, we need to look at potentially purging the voter rolls mm-hmm. and re-cleaning them up because they're out of line. There's no way you can say that they're accurate right now. And the only way I can see to do that would be to clean them out and then have everybody re-register and make it easy so that they can do it. You know, there's no excuses mm-hmm. of, oh, it's not going to happen. And then, you know, you just need to look at going back and enforcing things and finding out where the fraud is, not allowing the mail-in balloting, not allow stuff like what Houston's been doing where you're, you know, coming up and just dropping off your ballot harvesting, any of that kind of stuff that's been tried. We just need to put an end to it all. It's the most sacred thing we have is our vote. Mm-hmm. And right now we don't trust our elected officials because it's been stolen mm-hmm. effectively.
Property taxes. Texas has some of the highest property taxes in the nation. What would you do to help alleviate that burden on Texans?
Oh, so here's the fun one. I am going to eliminate them. There is no more excuse why you can tell us to rent from the government. Texas claims we're a free society. The United States of America, we all claim we're free. You're not free if you rent from the government. You don't own land. There's nothing to be free about. Mm-hmm. So the fact is you need to end it immediately. There's no more exceptions for it. I have a property plan called EliminatePropertyTax.com. It's been actually proposed back in 2013, and the legislature did not want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it's easy, something we can transition in 2 to 3 years, and it would actually switch us over to a VAT system.
Okay.
Which...
Explain that for folks who
right.
may
so
not
what
know.
It is basically a lot of people think of VAT as tax on top of tax, and it's not really. Right now, we already do tax on top of tax on top of tax. I mean, there's taxes on top of taxes anyway. So mm-hmm. this removes basically all the current tax system. And there's not going to be an income tax. It's against the Constitution of Texas, and nobody is going to go vote that back in. So we don't have to worry about that. The problem with sales tax is it's going to raise it too high. So what the VAT allows us to do is go back and restructure how we've done our entire tax system. And what you do is if I buy an item for $100 from you mm-hmm. as a commercial business, I pay taxes on it. And we're looking at roughly at the local levels, 10%. Okay. 7% to the state and up to 3% for the local and city level. So it keeps Austin from having this massive taxing redistribution system. We don't want that either. So what this would do is you would pay $100 and you'd pay the tax on that. If I resold it, or if you resold it after I sold it to you for $100 and you resold it for $100, mm-hmm. there's no more tax. You didn't increase. It's not, you did not add any value to it. If you sell it for $150, then you would charge tax on the additional 50 that you added to the value.
Okay.
So it's not tax on top of tax, because ultimately if I sold it originally for 150, you'd have paid the same price. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. But the way this has been done, the exceptions aren't in there like you see in Europe, mm-hmm. where you've got 20 and 25 and 40% VATs. This should keep us around a 10% mm-hmm. and actually protects almost every single city and county in the state where sales tax does not, and it's going to have to be 15 to 20% to go sales tax.
Why do you think there's been so much hesitation to do anything meaningful to reduce or abolish property taxes so far?
Because of lobbyists and crooked politicians, to be honest. I mean, they're getting paid off. There's no justification for it at all. Everybody runs on it, but if you notice the difference, and people will say, well, how do we know you're going to do it? Ask how many people have actually told you they're going to eliminate it when they ran for office and not said, well, we're going to look into property tax reform. Mm-hmm. That's their way of saying, like what Dan Patrick did, we got you $175, which is all this last legislation got us. $175 is the average savings for the consumer. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you cap things. So that's the thing, is we have to stop allowing the lobbyists and all the people, the builders organizations and everything, to come in and say, well, we need to keep this going. So don't eliminate it. Let's just work on reform. There's a lot of power in the taxing districts, and they don't want to lose that power. Mm-hmm. And switching off of it would take a lot of that away.
Looking at the Republican Party of Texas's priorities, a couple of them were addressed. I think notably constitutional carry has been a long time priority for Texas Republicans and for gun owners. That did pass this session. Is there anything more that Texas can do to be more friendly for the Second Amendment?
Well, first off, it needs to be actually constitutional. That's actually permitless. There's still plenty of violations in it. And the fact is, if you're going to name a bill constitutional carry, then you should probably go find all the things that took that constitutional right away and give those back to us, not write another bill. Once again, we can't legislate our way out of this. We need to start removing things that took that away from us. So, I mean, that's what we need to look from the Second Amendment standpoint is, you know, if it's constitutional right, then give it back to me. Stop trying to figure out how many ways you can put laws in place to still make sure that certain police unions and other people are protected in the process.
Ending child gender modification procedures, surgeries, mutilation, whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
That's something that's been a priority of the party. Something that has made it through in some form in the Senate, but has been blocked in the House. How do you, as Lieutenant Governor, I mean, you know, you're kind of control the Senate, but is there anything you can do to put pressure on the House to pass things?
Let's be honest. If anyone believes that Dan Patrick got it through the Senate and he didn't know that Dade Phelan was going to put it to 1,399, then you don't understand how Austin works. There's no way the most powerful position in Texas allows the House Speaker, when it's on the top eight priorities for the Senate, to kick it down to 1,399. And right in front of that was whether or not we have veterans in prison. So we were more worried about that than actually child gender modification. And the fact is, why wasn't Dan Patrick standing up and calling Phelan out, calling the committees of the House out, saying, why aren't you passing this? This is child abuse. This needs to be passed. It was on the top eight priorities. Get it done. We did our job, so you get it done. The fact is, they don't do that because the game they play every session is they take the top eight priorities, they pretty much blame two on the Democrats, they blame two on the Senate, they blame two on the House, and we get roughly two. That's what they do. They kill these things in committees. They already know the deals that they've made. So Dan does this game where he says, oh, look, I did everything. He knows the House is going to kill these bills. I've got a letter from him where he funded. He's asking for funding. And he said, well, if it wasn't for the Democrats, you know, we would have been able to get blocking the women and the transgenders in women's sports. Wait, if the Democrats... We have a majority in every single section of Texas right now as Republicans. How are you going to blame the Democrats? But this is the game they play. So the fact is, he could have applied the pressure. He could have made sure that the priorities were taken care of. He chose not to, and he plays this game where he hides in the back and lets Abbott and Phelan and everybody else takes the blame.
Heartbeat bill has been estimated to save about 100 lives every day since it's been enacted on September 1st. Obviously, it's kind of going a little bit through the courts, but but every day it's been saving 100 lives. What more can Texas do to protect life?
Well, let's go with this. Once again, didn't get our priorities. We asked for abolishing abortion. We got heartbeat bill. Heartbeat bill is fantastic. It's done a lot of good. However, one of the excuses for not going for abolishing abortion was we didn't want to challenge Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court. Well, the heartbeat bill still got to the Supreme Court. So what's the justification now? Roe v. Wade is not law. The judicial branch does not make law. That is not a federal right. It is a state's right, and we need to be standing up for that, and we need to be the state that finally challenges Roe v. Wade head on. No more excuses, because the other problem that has now come up, and the reason the heartbeat bill passed through the Supreme Court is this. As soon as that bill, as soon as the Supreme Court didn't turn it down, Gavin Newsom came out and said, now that we've officially changed the standing rules, and now that the heartbeat bill has been allowed to be passed, we're now going to use that to go after all the gun manufacturers and every other organization that we want to go after in the state of California. So once again, we didn't challenge things the way we should have. We didn't stand on our values and our morals. We once again said, well, we can't quite get there, so let's go for this. I believe in abolishing abortion, just like the people of Texas have asked for. I believe in protecting life. So let's do what we ask and stand on that ground and stop saying, well, as long as we can get this a little bit closer. It's kind of the same thing with property tax, right? Well, we'll just keep giving you a little bit. Let's get to what we asked for And let's stop messing with laws that start opening up other cans of worms that are now causing potentially bigger issues for conservative organizations like gun manufacturers, thanks to the new the new law that we've allowed to get through.
Another big issue, especially recently, has been vaccines, the COVID vaccine mandates that we're seeing hitting businesses, whether businesses are implementing them themselves, whether it's the federal government and their mandates. But yet the legislature has not been called into session. They haven't passed legislation to ban this. What is your take on if you were Lieutenant Governor, what you would want to see done right now?
Well, this is one time where I think we would have to look at legislation because it's not been done. And if we have enough strong leaders from governor to lieutenant governor and across the board, I don't even think we need the legislation because the fact is the federal government has no authority to put these mandates in place. There is nothing in the Constitution that provides for doing these mandates. And so we should just be standing up against it. But what I called out early on when I started running was, why wasn't Dan Patrick and Dade Phelan out there immediately saying, hey, let's get one of these special sessions, let's get on here and start protecting Texas citizens against federal mandates. Why don't we have a legislation saying we will not allow the federal government to enact these mandates on any citizen in Texas, whether they work for a private business or a federal business? I don't care. They're citizens of Texas. We have the right to protect those citizens. He didn't do that. And in fact, even when Southwest Airlines stood up, I actually called that out right before that happened. And I said, you don't want Abbott to be a tyrant, then don't ask him to be a tyrant. So everybody's like, Abbott, put a mandate in, block all these. No, that's not his job. You didn't like when he did mandates before. Stop asking him to do mandates. It's like, you know, he took it from us. Now it's like, mandate it back. That's not how this works. And so, you know, you saw in the third special session, he put in the mandate that only had a $1,000 fine. It didn't scare anybody off. And Dan Patrick and Dade Phelan balked on doing anything in the last 3 or 4 days of that special session to protect us. So they're not going to protect us. We should be protected. And just for reference point for anybody watching, I've worn a mask 2 times in my entire COVID history. I have 26 employees. We have never enforced masks on our employees. I've gone into homes every single day in this state, 5 to 6 times a day, in a very busy COVID session, you know, the original COVID part especially. Yeah. And I was able to go in all those homes and customers had no problem with it when you told them the situation and you said, I'm not going to do it. When you don't comply, people normally will do it. They wanted my business more than they were worried about that mask. So the fact is, all we have to do is just stop complying and we'll be okay. But that's where we need stronger leadership to say, look, we're going to back you up against the federal government if they come in after you. And right now, our leadership in Texas is not protecting us.
Perhaps there's no bigger issue that has gained attention than the crisis at the southern border. We've seen a big, you know, invasion, especially since last January, last year. We've seen a big invasion over the southern border in Texas. What would you do as Lieutenant Governor? What are your thoughts on what the state of Texas can be doing to help repel that?
Well, the first thing is we need to finish the wall that Trump started. You know, especially the ones that are sitting on the ground rusting and we're being told, well, that was federal property. That's my tax dollars and your tax dollars. It's not federal property.
Yeah.
So let's first use those wall pieces and let's get that job done. But from the Lieutenant Governor, what I would want to see done is I would want to fund the wall. I want to fund the State Guard properly and actually give them the proper gear, unlike right now the National Guard who's dying for proper winter gear. I'm going to give them set orders and not allow them to be, you know, left out in the cold and not, you know, not with their families because they don't know how long they're going to be deployed and all the games that are being played with these guys right now. For where the holes are filled with the State Guard, I would like to fund militia, that dirty, dirty word. But the fact is, this country is founded on a militia. So, you know, we need additional help. And if the citizens are willing to help, then let's you know, go through that process, provide the sheriff's time, provide sheriffs the authority to actually stand up for themselves and not be telling them to step down and, or I should say stand down. And then also, you know, allowing them to deputize and do what's best for their counties to protect the citizens of Texas. And that means we need to be able to fire back. We need to be able to do everything because they're shooting across our border and that's an act of war. So we need to protect our border. We need to shut it down. And, you know, I've said multiple times now, and I've had a couple posts about it. Look, if the governor in charge won't do his job and I'm in there, and I do all that, and that's still not enough, then I'm going to do whatever it takes, a constitutional crisis. I'll go outside my guidelines. I'm not going to let our citizens be taken advantage of any longer. Oh, the other one thing I would do, too, is I would shut down the state highways. Okay. I would start figuring out a way to shut down the state highways from the DOT buses moving and protect not the regular citizens, but these DOT buses and all the federal property. They're using federal property and using state highways to go to another federal property and busing and flying these the illegals all over our country, not just our state. So those are the steps we could take. And then, you know, go from there.
Yeah. Last question before we have to wrap up here. Looking at the campaign, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he's been endorsed by President Donald Trump. There's a few other candidates in the race as well. What do you think your path to victory is? And what are you telling voters as you go out to these events?
Well, on the Trump endorsement, he also endorsed Abbott. And nobody in Texas looks at Trump's endorsements like they used to, thanks to those couple of endorsements. So don't really worry about that. The fact is, you can't. Trump is just one man. While he may have a voice and we may have done it, we were the movement. Trump was not the movement. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep trying to remind everybody is Trump said what we wanted to hear and we thought he would go fight for us. Trump didn't do this. We did this. We keep looking to our elected leaders like they're in charge and they're our kings and queens. They're not. We have the power. So I don't care what some other guy says. I don't care what his position is. You need to do your own research and you need to figure out the candidate that believes and fights for what you believe in. And right now, Dan Patrick isn't doing that, so that endorsement means nothing. But the difference with me and kind of my goal is this. The Republican Party has been kind of in a box. We have this old system. We don't want to really reach out to different people. And the left is winning the culture war across the board right now. Mm-hmm. We have now become the counterculture, and it's about time we get our culture back. The fact is there are plenty of people, no matter what their skin tone are, no matter what their religion, no matter what it is, that believe in hard work, Christian family values. They believe in everything. They believe like Republicans do. So it's about time we go to those people and say, look, this is what we're going to do different than what we've always done, and mm-hmm. this is why you should come vote for the Republicans. And I believe if I can get that message out, then Dan Patrick doesn't have a chance because he's not going to reach the Hispanics and the urban communities and all these communities because they already know he's not done anything for them. And it's not about doing anything for them. It's about saying, look, do we all agree that the elite government is out of control and that we, the people, need to restore that power? And if that's the case, let's figure out where we agree upon. And I guarantee you that we actually believe almost identical. And our goal should be to take the guys out in charge that have been doing this to us for forever. And so that's been my kind of message of unite the people based on beliefs and values and stop focusing on these old ways and old methods of doing politics.
If people want to follow your campaign or get involved, where can they do that at?
They can go to my website. The short one to make it easy is s4tx.com. You can also go to the full one, which is sorrells4texas.com. It is the number four also. You can go to all social media. I have at sorrells4texas on all social media. And you know, we're doing lots of things. We're starting to do Twitter spaces, mm-hmm. Which has been something Twitter didn't think was going to help. So now we're actually doing a podcast on there, kind of using it as a podcast. So there's a lot of ways we're doing things. But I'm trying to reach the 45 and under crowd, so I'm going to be a lot more on social media and podcasts because that's where they are. Mm-hmm. And so that's the people we need to bring back to the voting base. And so that's where you're going to see a lot of me.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
we appreciate
for having
it.
Me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.